Hey folks, this is John. Welcome back to another episode of Talk to Me in the Car, a podcast about all things teaching related and education inspired that I literally record right here in my vehicle on my drive back from work as a high school instructional coach in Arlington, Virginia, which is just outside of Washington, D.C. Each week we put about 11 to 15 minutes of podcast, depending on how long the drive is in this bumper-to-bumper traffic. And it's a great time to do some brain dumping here with like actionable strategies you can put in your classroom, whether you're dealing with littles or middles, high schools, all the way up to big kids like me, adult learners. And today we're talking all about trauma-informed classrooms because we're wrapping up Mental Health Awareness Week. And I'm recording this as we're wrapping up Mental Health Awareness Week, and so it'll go live on Monday. New podcast episodes drop every Monday. If you like what you're hearing, feel free to subscribe on your favorite podcasting app or leave a nice rating. It helps people find us. And some housekeeping notes, if you're interested in talking more, feel free to message me on Twitter. I'm at MeehanEDU. It's Meehan like my last name and EDU like teaching. I love teaching and I want to get better at it, and I love talking with teaching with anyone who's doing it in awesome degrees in their own classrooms. And if you want to talk further, I have a website. It's www.adrenalinerush.com. That's adrenaline with an E, like educational adrenaline, because I'm fired up to teach and I want to get more excited. And I have that on my website. And it's the name of my book too, which is Adrenaline Rush. It's all about game-changing student engagement, inspired by theme parks, mud runs, and escape rooms. So let's talk about the things that are exciting and the things that are frightening. Because as we're on this talking about trauma-informed classrooms, I'm going to totally own it. I am not a licensed counselor. I am totally speaking above my pay grade here. I'm not Green Dot certified. I am not trauma-informed certified. But I did have a chance this past week to take a trip to Chicago, where they were hosting a conference for Catholic school educators about the idea of mental health awareness in the classrooms. This is not a new topic. It's sort of been in the educational waters for quite some time. But as we talk about whether you call it whole child, or whether you talk about trauma-informed, or the Catholic perspective, we talk about the dignity of the human person, recognizing that there are learners in our classrooms that present with all sorts of learning differences, learning disabilities, learning roadblocks. And, you know, as the famous saying goes, you can't do the Blooms before you do the Maslows, right? That's safe and supported. We know that the brain pathways will shut down. And if a child has not been fed, or if a child is coming from a place of abuse or trauma, there's nothing they're going to be able to do to turn on those, you know, afterburners and get the learning happening at very high levels of the taxonomy. So if Blooms is all about getting students to create and evaluate, to, you know, even at a lower level, to apply and analyze, or just to remember and understand, if they haven't been fed, or if they're coming out of a place where they've been physically or emotionally or sexually or socially abused, it's really hard to make them just turn it on and pretend that all that stuff isn't happening. You know, we say over and over again, well, the real world needs you to kind of buck up and put on, you know, like that big boy pants. But the truth is, that's not true. There's a lot about the, quote, real world that we're learning more and more that trauma-informed is very, very real. Think about like a concussion, for example. If you're an athlete and you present with a concussion in 2019, how much more empathetic and sympathetic and aware is a football team or a soccer team or a hockey team than they were even in 2009 about the severity and the authenticity, the veracity of a concussion? Same holds true with mental health issues. That's not fake. Not someone who's just, you know, feeling a little soft or feeling a little blue or maybe a little bubble-wrapped or mollycoddled. Put another way, this is sort of rhymy and maybe a little too cute for its own good, but if a child presents with an injury to their leg, you would not make them run a marathon, right? But if a child presents with an injury to their heart or to their, you know, to their brain, would you make them take that Scantron? Because when you think about it, if you're a gym teacher and you're like, all right, you got a broken leg, Billy? Run that marathon anyway. Too bad for you. Today's marathon day. We're just going to do it. Buck up. Likelihood is, A, the kid would feel really hurt through the process. B, you'd get really bad results if they were able to finish it all. And C, any rational person, a person with a heart, would look at you like, you're kind of a monster. You're kind of cruel forcing a child who's dealing with physical trauma to add more trauma on top of their trauma directly when they have a hurt leg to do a thing that's going to ask them to work out that muscle. So take that and let's, you know, kind of follow the metaphor, right? If a child is dealing with a wounded heart or a wounded brain, and it doesn't have to be a concussion, like a physical wound to a brain, this could be something just emotional. Maybe their folks are splitting up. Maybe they're coming from a household of poverty. Maybe they have not eaten. Maybe they don't know where their next meal is coming from. Maybe there's a, you know, relocation or a death in the family, and then there's something that they're dealing with that's very, very real on an emotional level for them. maybe it's something as small as they just got, you know, passed over for somebody else for the school play, or they got cut from the basketball team, or they got dumped by that boy or that girl, and they're trying to figure out, you know, their next steps in their romantic dating life. Or maybe they're dealing with their own sexuality and figuring out, you know, like, who they are as a young person while they're trying to figure out their gender identity. Any of these things sort of run the gamut of things that can affect our mental health, our mental awareness. And I guess the thing is, as adults, you know, we can look back at this and say, well, you know, it's just part of life. You kind of got to get knocked off the bicycle and dust yourself off and get back on. But we have the benefit of 2 and 3 and 4 and 5 or sometimes, you know, even longer life experience than our children in our classrooms have. You know, I'm in my 30s, right? And I'm teaching kids who are in their teens. So I have like 3 times the life experience when I see them, you know, falling off the bike. And I have the benefit to say, hey, it gets better, guys. You know, it also gets worse, but it gets a lot better. So don't take this one so seriously. But when you're 15, 16 years old and that girl doesn't ask you to the prom, or that guy, you know, dumps you and goes out with your best friend, you don't have the coping mechanisms available to you to say, oh my gosh, it's going to get better. This is just but one blip on the radar. And so what winds up happening for so many of our students is it really can feel like the end of their world because they don't have those coping mechanisms built in place. And so when a teacher doubles down and says, too bad you had a bad weekend there, Jimmy. Sorry your football team lost. Get back on the horse. Let's do it again because geometry waits for no man. You know, I'm not saying to sit there and stop the world so that everyone can have a good cry. What I'm saying is to recognize, especially when there's real trauma that's deeper and like bigger and broader and maybe more serious, right? That if there were things like broken legs, you would spot that out and you can say that between a stubbed toe and a broken leg. Someone somewhere, and that could be your counselors, it could be if you're in a Christian school or a religious school, a chaplain or a priest or a cleric, like someone has the ability to step in and say, look, there's some normal background noise to just being a kid and being a human and being a person that, yeah, life is hard sometimes. But this particular human is dealing with some very real things. And if this raises to the level of, like, the equivalent of a broken leg, maybe that kid doesn't have to run the marathon today. And there are a lot of ways to kind of look at that. One of the tools that I've found that I really, really like, not because I like that these unfortunate traumas happen to people, but that there are tools and there are resources available for teachers or counselors or support staffs or administration to kind of help start conversations about this. It's called the Adverse Childhood Experiences Questionnaire, or the ACE questionnaire. You might also heard it called like the ACE kit or the ACE questions. And basically, if you just Google the word ACE and trauma, it will come up. But the Adverse Childhood Experiences Questionnaire is like a battery of questions that asks us as educators to work with students. And again, a counselor could do the same thing. And this could be a school counselor or a private counselor. It's a series of like red flags. For students under the age of 18, what they find is it doesn't really matter what the traumas are, whether it's a physical abuse or an emotional abuse, whether it's a homelessness or poverty, whether it's a divorce or a separation or the loss of a parent or the death of a loved one. Doesn't matter what the flag is. There's a whole bunch of flags that could come up. But once it hits a certain threshold, and I'm going to use fake numbers, right? You're under the age of 18. Let's say you've hit 3 flags or 4 flags or 7 flags. At a certain point, your ACE score is there to give a heads up that you are kind of in that protocol that we need to watch out because there's a lot working against you in the classroom that it might be harder for you to have a traditional learning experience. And if that makes any sense, if it were a concussion protocol, we would have a physical, you know, like to make sure that you're good to go and that you're able to have clear memory tests and clear vision tests, that you know, that you have no nausea and things like that to get back in the game, so to speak. We don't have something that's hard and fast for emotional and mental health. And what winds up happening is for our students, if we don't do something that helps test them back in, we just presume, it's been a week, you should get over it. Unfortunately, grief is not linear. I heard it described one time that trauma and grief works much like a box. Imagine like a shoebox with a button inside of it. And locked inside of that box, you have something the size of a softball. That could be your trauma or your grief. It's kind of bouncing around the four walls, but it's locked inside that box. The likelihood that it hits that little button on the inside is pretty good because you have a very big ball inside of a relatively small box. Now, over time, that ball will shrink, but it still lives inside that box, maybe from the size of a softball to a baseball, then to a golf ball, and maybe even to the size of a marble. but it still bounces around that box. It never really goes away. And that button inside of the box is still possible that it could be hit by that little ball at any time. Now, the likelihood of that ball hitting that button over time does get smaller and smaller as we go, right? But as that trauma shrinks, it never fully disappears. And so grief isn't linear and trauma isn't linear. And as someone's processing something, they might have these triggers, these flare-ups, and it happens again and again. And what we know as adults is things like, you know, clinical depression and anxiety, they're real, right? And sometimes they're just brought on by seasonal affective disorder, sometimes they're brought on by all sorts of just life triggers. And it's not necessarily the same thing will be the same trigger for all persons. And so it's critically important to note, and again, I am speaking totally above my pay grade, I'm not a licensed counselor, but grief is real, trauma is real, and if we're just treating all students like, well, you've been in protocol for a week, you should be fine now, we're doing them a grave disservice, because again, if they had a wounded leg, we wouldn't ask them to run a marathon. So as they deal with wounds that are real on emotional levels, there's something about this that challenges us as educators to sort of pump those brakes and say, wait a minute, maybe that test isn't necessary for that child, or that homework isn't necessary for that child. And we start to look at the numbers behind it, I think we'd be really surprised to find out the sheer number of our kids who are dealing with all sorts of trauma. And maybe we as educators, in spite of our best efforts to make safe and supportive classrooms, might actually be kind of compounding it when we're doing that nightly homework and those daily quizzes and then that don't fall behind or you're never going to make it into college. And just like that, our students are compounding grief on top of grief and pain on top of pain, stress on top of stress. And I'm wondering, sort of as a challenge to all listeners, what can we do? What can you do? What can I do in my classroom to make that room feel safer and more supportive to our students who might be dealing with those sorts of things that are triggering or trauma that are real? I encourage you to check out the ACE questionnaire. It's awesome. You can find it on just by Googling for it. It's but one of many, many services and products that are available totally free for educators to become more empathetic and more aware in our classrooms. And as you take that, maybe take the ACE indicators for yourself. Think about yourself when you were before age 18. I would encourage you to look at that for yourself, talk with it in your department, talk with you with your counseling services team, your administration, and then look at other options and ways that we can help alleviate or de-stress for our students. And whether that's mindfulness or whether that's restorative justice practices in our classroom, or maybe it's just the way that we approach our pedagogy to be more human-centered. And sometimes it's more questions than answers, but these are good questions to have because it means we're really addressing the needs of the learners in our classroom and not just treating them as if they're like numbers to be pushed through or like meat through a grinder. So anyways, that's my thoughts for this week. Like I said, I'm totally owning it. It's above my pay grade to get into all of the answers for this, but they're absolutely conversations worth having. If you like what you're hearing, I would love to message back and connect with you on Twitter or on the website. Thank you again so much, and I'll be back with another episode on Monday.